You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
John Barry was on the call last night, game three between the Nets and Bucks on ESPN. He has Jazz Clippers Saturday night, also on ESPN Radio, the former NBA veteran joining us on the program. John, good to have you back. Thanks for joining us. Let's start at the end of that game. We had all this conversation about who's going to take the last shot for the Nets. In a million years, if I would have said, you know, Bruce Brown is going to take that last shot for the Nets, what would you have said?
No thanks. It was a discombobulated possession. Obviously, they threw it in bounds. The ball rolls all the way across the court. You know, Bruce had some time to wait for Kyrie, wait for Kevin Durant to give him that basketball. Look, Bruce Brown played great. And this guy's a 6'4 center. He was a point guard, I believe, in Miami, University of Miami, and he's come out and he plays the center position. It's incredible. But, yeah, obviously the possession didn't go like they wanted. Tough shot over the top of Brook Lopez. But I'm just shocked at that game. 86-83 is a bad three quarters normally for Brooklyn. And they get 83 points for the game. It was stunning that these two offenses were that bad last night.
But this is by design for Milwaukee. It was a physical game, tough game. Do they have to keep that score under 110, under 100, if they have any chance of winning this series?
Yeah, they would like to, you know, but typically you're going to have to score to beat Brooklyn. That's the bottom line. Yeah. Even without James Harden, where they get 125 and 115 in the first two games, that was shocking. I mean, what were they? They scored 11 points in the first quarter, you know, down 19 after one. Kevin Durant doesn't go 11 for 28 very often, and that won't happen again. So if I'm Milwaukee, do I take confidence out of that, that I held Brooklyn to 83 and I won? I don't think so. I still think Brooklyn has been by far the better team throughout these first three games.
Yeah, and then you have the Giannis situation. He's not a good shooter. You can't put him on the line. You were a great free throw shooter. Your father, one of the great free throw shooters in NBA history. What is it that happens at the line with some of these players that they almost look paralyzed, John?
Do some people not like to be the center of attention? Like, I mean, I'm not saying you're scared, but you're standing there and you know whatever's in the building, 20,000 or whatever, are watching you. I mean, look, I played with Shaq. We would shoot free throws every day when I was with the Lakers in 97. He would go 18 for 20, 17 for 20 all the time. And I don't know, does fatigue play into it? I'm not exactly sure, but I would say this. Is get the routine faster. He got called for one last night, the 10-second rule. He had 13 seconds they gave him. I would go quicker. Colin Montgomery, a great golfer, right? Great Ryder Cupper. And he always said, the longer you stand over a ball, the more bad things are going to get in your head. So know what you have to do. He knows what he's got to do. Get the ball. Get a routine that's quick. Shoot it with confidence and move on.
Well, we see this with Ben Simmons. I don't think Ben has bad form, but – he doesn't bend at his knees and then, like, there's no fluidity to it. It's these guys get there and they're like stiff and then there's no movement from the ground up.
His form is not great. The elbow's out a bit. I'd rather have your form, to be quite honest, watching you and maybe some of the Donettes back there. I didn't somebody shoot a jump shot from three throw line that really struggled years ago? Do you remember?
Wilt Chamberlain did.
Did he? He took jumpers?
Well, no, he was at the top of the key. He was so bad. Hal Greer played for the 76ers. Hal Greer took a jump shot from the free throw line.
Okay. Yeah. I think my dad talked Wilt into trying underhand for a minute, but guys were a bit embarrassed about it. But it's amazing. I mean, you bring up Ben Simmons and like, how can guys be this great at basketball and you cannot make a 10-foot jump shot, or you're not even willing to take it?
I know.
But look, Ben Simmons is great. This guy's a great player. But, I mean, isn't that, like, don't you start as a kid? Like,
I think he
one day I'm going to make a free throw.
He could be a great player. I don't think he's a great player.
Well, I think he can control ball games and be the best player on the floor at times. And
but that time can't be at the end of a game when I know that he is going to have to shoot a free throw, and he – Like, he can't shoot a free throw or a three-pointer. It's like the Greek Freak. He can't shoot. He can control a game. And I wonder, is Giannis a one, or is he more of a two who can rely on or needs to rely on a one?
That's a good question. Obviously, in the playoffs, he hasn't proven to be a one. That's taken his team to where they need to be.
Yeah.
And look, he's 4 for 32 from the 3-point line now in the playoffs. And last night, I have no affiliation with the Bucks, even though I played there. I try to forget my time there. I was like, I'm frustrated watching this. Like, don't shoot a three. I don't care if you're Giannis or if you're Michael Jordan. I'd be like, don't shoot him anymore. I mean, it serves no purpose. 4 for 32. I mean, that's just, you can't do it.
We're talking to John Barry, the former NBA veteran who apparently played on just about every team in the NBA. So
just eight.
Eight. Oh, that was it?
That's seven, maybe seven. So, yeah.
The worst stop was Milwaukee?
Well, it was cold.
Well,
and we stunk.
Okay. All right.
Other than that, it was they're great people in Milwaukee and great broads.
Paulie, do you have how many games? Yes.
I got John Barry with eight teams and 36 starts out of 821 games.
Hey, man, try coming off the bench for some of these starters and they whine about whatever. It's hard to do. It's a skill.
He was on the call last night, game three between the Nets and Bucks. He's got the Jazz and the Clippers, game three. I'm trying to figure out the Clippers here, John. I got two really good wing defenders who can't guard anybody on the wing. So help me out here, John.
Yeah. And throw in Pat Beverly. He's supposed to be a superior wing defender.
Yeah.
And you had Luka torch him for 36 a night in a seven-game series. And now Donovan Mitchell gets, 82 points in two games? And there were two winnable games. I mean, the Clippers, give them credit. You know, they come back from 21 down in the third quarter last night and have an opportunity. Kawhi hasn't really gone off like he did a couple times in the Dallas series. Ty Lue, he switches it up on a game-to-game basis, doesn't he? I mean, yeah. No Rondo last night. Sometimes he plays Zubat. Sometimes he plays small. Sometimes he plays big. He's searching. And I'm not sure what to think. I'd feel a lot better if I was the Clippers and I were the Bucks, even though they're down 2-0 as they go home.
Who do you think's more likely to play for a championship first? Devin Booker? Donovan Mitchell?
Those two teams are both scary. You know, obviously, I don't think Denver has an opportunity to get out with the loss of Jamal Murray. But I think if we see Phoenix, Utah in the next series, that is a complete toss-up, in my opinion. And Monty Williams, you can't say enough. They won 19 games 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're terrific. They play with great confidence. Devin Booker is phenomenal. And Chris Paul, obviously. Can you believe Chris Paul's never gotten out of the second round in his career? How is that possible?
Well, that's why when people say you got to have Chris Paul and he's a great leader and he's a winner, but he hadn't won.
Really? He's never gotten out of the second round.
I know.
I mean, and he single-handedly had a couple of times where he was directly responsible for them not getting out. You remember he tried a three-quarter court shot against Oklahoma City because he thought he was drawing a foul to get three free throws, and they didn't call it, and they lost the game. And then they were – he was with the Clippers. They were up 20 on Houston in the second half to close out a series, lost and lost in seven. I mean, some unbelievable, inexplicable losses for Chris Paul, but I don't doubt his greatness because he's great and he is a great leader.
What's going to happen with the Lakers in the offseason, aside from LeBron changing his jersey number?
Complete overhaul.
Overhaul?
I don't think Schroeder's back. I think they try to move Kuzma. Wesley Matthews gone. They'll try to probably re-sign Caruso. I don't think Drummond goes back. Gasol will be gone. I think it's a total overhaul.
Wow.
Yeah. Why not? Their three-point shooting. I mean, look, they were hurt. And when we went into the playoff game, playing game, excuse me. I mean, they literally could have lost that game to the Golden State Warriors at home. They had not played together. They had Drummond, who just got there. They didn't play with LeBron and AD. Schroeder was out for 2 weeks protocol. They were totally discombobulated. And you could see their offense was completely out of sorts. And they were banged up. So I'll give them that excuse. And, you know, but think about this too, Dan. They won a bubble championship last year. Look at all the players that they've given up to get Anthony Davis. Now, let's say they don't win another championship with LeBron. And they got, a 2 or 3 year window of that. If they never win again, is that worth it? To get one title?
Probably. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, you got to get one. You got to get one. It's like if the Nets get one, this was worth it.
Right. Well, the Nets tried it a few years ago with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, and that didn't pan out so well. But, I mean, look at the talent that the Lakers have given up on, right? Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, LaMelo Ball, Lonzo Ball. Who else? I mean, Jordan Clarkson. There are a lot of guys that they mortgaged, you know, to get this done, and they got their one title, so maybe they'll be happy.
But what's the reputation with Anthony Davis?
I think great player, just fragile, I guess. I mean, or you can say unlucky.
Okay.
And is he really truly a number one guy? I know he's not playing as the number one guy now, but when LeBron leaves, is he enough to be your number one guy and carry you to a championship? Didn't work in New Orleans, obviously didn't have the talent, but can he be a number one?
But is that more mindset, though, John, that you have to want to be the guy, that, you know, that mentality of, like Iverson, every night, like I'm going to be the guy, you know, all of these guys that you played against or with, you had to have that mentality of, when I go out there, I'm the man. I don't know if Anthony Davis feels that way, will feel that way when LeBron's not there. Does the Greek Freak think he's the one when he goes out there? Should he think he's the one? I just wonder about that whole mindset of, I want it, man. I want the game on the line, the ball in my hands.
Well, how many guys you think have been like that in the history of the league? No, really.
Not a lot. Not as many as people think.
Correct.
Because you guys you knew that there are guys who had alligator arms. You know, when their game on the line, you want to throw it to them, and then they may not want it. Give me those names. Yeah. Give me those names of those guys. Because you have to want it. And I just wonder if, like, playoff P, you want to be paid like you're a star, but you got to act like a star.
Yeah. And, well, you have to perform like it. You start with Michael Jordan, right? I mean, that guy, there's no question that would be the guy. Right.
And Kobe.
He wants Kobe. Kobe's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is LeBron that guy?
Well, you played against all three. So you play against Jordan, sure. Kobe, and LeBron.
Yeah.
Game on the line. What was the biggest difference?
LeBron would be more apt to make the pass. Okay. Right. Is it the correct play? Probably. But Michael Jordan, do you think he cared about the correct play? He did give it to Steve Kerr, right, when John Stockton came over and doubled, and Steve Kerr hit the shot. But Michael was reluctant to do that for many years. And until he didn't win until he started trusting his teammates, right?
Yeah.
But Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant is close to Michael Jordan as anybody I think we've ever seen. So those two guys.
But LeBron is great at – like, I don't know if there's a better guy getting to the hoop in NBA history than
But
LeBron.
Does he go there at the end of the – does he go there at the end of games?
No,
he does not
as
want
much.
To go to the free throw line.
Yeah, I know.
No,
I know.
He does not want to go to
what
the
What is
free
it
throw
about that? That
– I mean, how would you not want to?
God, the game on the line. Like, he's under 70% from the line. I just – that.
How about Giannis was – 53% coming in.
John,
53%.
You could shoot blindfolded, and I know this is true.
I would make 5 out of 10 blindfolded,
you would make,
I would hope.
You would make more than that.
I would hope.
Yeah.
If I, you would too.
Yeah, I know I would. But I'm obviously a great shooter, John.
Yes, you are. Well, it's all relative.
Okay, Ben Simmons, Giannis, and me in a shooting contest.
Oh, yeah, I'll take you 100%.
And that's the right answer there. That's the right answer.
Well, yes.
Yeah, of course it is.
On the golf course?
No, I'm better than Ben Simmons and Giannis on the golf course.
I'm talking about me and you.
No, you're really good on that. But see, I have a full-time job.
I'm not full-time?
No, you're not full-time. I mean, come on. You mail it in. Like, you give me a couple of hours and that's it. You can play golf all day.
I try to.
I know you do.
If my wine drinking doesn't get in the way.
But, okay, you got game three coming up over the weekend. So, you got a couple of days off, John.
I do. Today will be a tough day.
Are you going to be studying tape? Is that what you're going to try to tell us?
Oh, I'll rewatch both games last night, yes.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll get going.
All right. Do you have a grudge? Do you hold a grudge against anybody you played with? Like, all these years later, are you still sort of frosty at somebody?
Just every coach that didn't play me more. I mean, that's all. Jeff Van Gundy, he didn't play me enough. No. I just, you know, the game is hard. The game is not as fun to watch for me as it was back when I played in the 90s. Steve did it. It's just that. Everybody kind of does the same thing, you know. It's high pick and roll, get a switch, circle somebody out that you want to get one-on-one, everybody get the hell out of the way and drive the ball. If they help, kick it to a three-point shooter, and then we move on.
But you look at these rules, and I just wonder what certain players from another era would have been like with today's rules. If I would allowed, like, what kind of player would Magic be in today's game? Like, would Michael be shooting threes? Kobe would be Kobe. I mean, even greater. Because he can shoot the three.
How would you guard Kobe and Michael Jordan? You can't touch them. I mean, I think Michael would be averaging 45 points without a problem. He'd be at the line 20 times. I mean, that's what they wanted, right? They geared this to get offense. Yeah. They don't. It's like the NFL, right? With the cornerbacks, you can't touch a guy. They want offense, and they're not giving defenses a chance. So it's just the 3-point line has really changed the game. It really has. They finally figured it out statistic wise that shooting the three 50 times a game is better than, you know, laying the ball in. 3-on-2. Remember 3-on-1 breaks? Hey guys, run to the wing and then run right to the rim
and get a layup.
They run right to the corner three every time.
Yeah, I know. We sound like the old guy. Get off my lawn. I there was too much physicality back in the 90s.
Yes,
and it took away from greatness. There's too much freedom now, where you can't touch anybody, and I don't know if you were going to make a change, would you move the 3-point shot back? Would you widen the court? Would you do anything drastic to help the NBA?
I like widen the court, maybe widen the lane. But I think if you move that 3-point line back, it would probably be worse because people are still going to do it. And, you know, there's so many guys that shoot the three that shouldn't be shooting the three. Right? I mean, if you're like Russell Westbrook, like, he's a career 30% maybe, or 29%. I think he's the worst of all time.
Is he a great – is he one of the all-time great players?
That's a tough one. I mean, to average a triple-double, what is that, 3 out of the last 4 years he's done that?
Yeah.
Now, but there's a reason that hasn't happened since Oscar Robertson in the 60s, right? The game is that much different, right? I mean, when you're taking 50 threes in a game, how many rebounds go out to the free throw line where point guards can pick them up? Back in the day, that's not what happened. Fours and fives were guys that got rebounds, and that's it.
Yeah.
Point guards didn't get rebounds. I bet you if you look, John Stockton would have games where he had no rebounds and 17 assists. And so the game's different, but again, to get – a triple-double, you have to be involved in a whole lot of plays
but
throughout the course
Russell,
of the game.
Magic's the greatest point guard of all time, right?
Yeah, I would take him.
Okay.
And then John Stockton.
You would take Stockton over Westbrook?
Yeah.
Okay.
To play with?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Jason Kidd, would you take him over Westbrook?
Yeah, I think I'd rather play with him.
Chris Paul.
Chris Paul.
Okay. Well, Scotty Brooks was saying that he thinks Russell Westbrook might be the second greatest point guard of all time. Now, I know it's his guy, but
he's on his team.
I know.
What do you have to say? Russell Westbrook, I mean, these numbers are felonious. I don't want him.
He's the 19th best point guard. Yeah, I know.
Dan, he's the best athlete at the point guard position to ever play. 100%.
All right. I know your tee time's in 20 minutes, so I'm sorry if I held you up there from teeing off.
No, I'm a member guest at the club that I can't play in because I'm working.
Oh, you're working. That's right.
Tomorrow.
My bad.
So I can't play.
Man, you got a tough life. Tough life. John, thanks for joining us, bud. Great to talk to you.
Great to catch up with you, Dan.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
He is a former college quarterback, former college coach, and currently he is a college football analyst for CBS Sports. The popular Rick Neuheisel is joining us on the program. Rick, your reaction to the news yesterday that 12-team playoff is not a question of if, but when?
I'm in that choir singing hallelujah. Hallelujah. We need this. And this is not Alabama or Ohio State or Clemson's fault. All they did was rise to the top of college football, and they had a stranglehold on it because every recruit wanted to be a part of the college football playoff. And those were the three places, along with Oklahoma, I guess, but they never won one of the games, that you'd go if you wanted to be in it. And, you know, I think it was time that we changed the format that allows a little bit more inclusion for other places, especially when schedules are not alike. You know, we've got two conferences amongst the Power Five that still are only playing eight conference games. So if you're not going to have at least some measure of equality from the scheduling standpoint, then probably we need more spots. And what you just talked about in terms of what it means financially, you're going from three games in the college playoff format now to 11 games, the four play-in, the quarterfinal games, and then the three that we've already got. Maybe not changing who's ultimately going to lift the trophy, but certainly give more in the world of college football a bite at the apple.
Any downside to this?
The only thing that I'm sitting here going, is this a move towards better scheduled games in the regular season? And I'm not sure that it does that. I don't think we've now put more onus on, you know, the Alabamas of the world to, you know, travel to Los Angeles to play USC. I think that the one-off games are still going to be where they'll go. That money game like they've got with Miami to start the season in Atlanta this year. I don't think we've done anything to force the issue to get the home-and-home games going, although there is a lot of those on the books in advance years. So fingers crossed that we'll get there because the college football fan deserves that.
Well, what about Notre Dame? Notre Dame is not going to be in the top four. They're right. Not in a conference here.
And yet Jack Swarbrick was on this.
I know. They're athletic director. So I don't – like, does this push Notre Dame to join the ACC now?
And maybe Jack Swarbrick secretly is hoping that's exactly what it will do. I mean, you can't have looked at last year's year, the one-off time in the ACC, and say that was unsuccessful for Notre Dame. That was absolutely a great year for Notre Dame, and the fact that they were in that league, I think, helped them get to a place where they were going to be part of the college football playoff. They were absolutely going to be there, and, you know, to play an ACC schedule, a Power 5 schedule, I think helped them in some ways. Now, I know they've got a modus operandi where they want to travel far and wide, you know, touch each portion of the country in the Notre Dame mission. But ultimately, maybe this is exactly what pushes them over the edge and gets them in the ACC.
And I know that we have a lot of blowouts. There's going to be blowouts because there's a big difference between Clemson, Alabama, and Indiana or Coastal Carolina. Are you okay with that? That, you know, the optics of this is going to be, oh, you know what? Why are we having these games? These are blowouts and kind of embarrassing the playoffs.
I'm thrilled that we've, you know, now got a surety that the group of five is going to be included. At least one group of five champion will be in the hunt for this. And to start college football seasons as we have in the past with really no chance, zero chance, as Dean Wormer once said, 0.0. When you have a season that starts that way, something is wrong with the system. So now we've got at least one, the potential for two, should a conference champion come from the Power Five that wasn't up to snuff. But ultimately, that's all good news. I don't worry so much about those blowout games. When great teams, you know, are on the field, that happens. It happens in the NFL periodically, and it will happen again in this. But I remember back that Georgia-Oklahoma game in the Rose Bowl, the overtime thriller. I say we're going to have more chances at that because what will happen over the a period of years as this begins is there will be more spreading of the great players, the great talent in the United States. They won't all just go to the top three places, but knowing that there are more chances to get to the playoff, maybe closer to home.
Yeah, I liken it to Gonzaga, because Gonzaga used to be a novelty in basketball. And, you know, they would be like, oh, that's a cute story, Gonzaga. Now Gonzaga is getting some of the top recruits in the country. And a lot of that is they got an opportunity. If the field was 32, as it used to be a long, long time ago, you would have a lot of these programs who would never get this opportunity to grow their program. Indiana, being on a national stage with their football program, I thought I would never see that in my lifetime. Coastal Carolina, you know, they would make the playoffs. And I like that it gives you an opportunity to be seen by more people, because we wouldn't have seen the Indiana story this year or Coastal Carolina. Boise State wouldn't exist. You know, I think having that opportunity where you get to play against the big boys and, you know, that opportunity for players to see or recruits to see you play, I think it's a benefit for these smaller schools that would not be, they would be dwarfed by Alabama and Clemson, and they may still be, but you just want to be in the conversation. That's it. Give me a seat at the table. It can be a bad seat. It can be an obstructed view. Just give me a seat at the table.
Your Gonzaga example is a perfect one. Butler is another example, right? The Gordon Haywood shot off the glass that, you know, everybody's still gasping, wondering how it didn't go in. Those moments now can be part of college football. You know, I don't know that we're going to see an Appalachian State knock off Michigan in the college football playoff as we did in the Big House, but it's possible. And now when you have that possibility and you can sit down in the living room and talk about that possibility, it's much easier for that young man to say, you know what, I'm going to stay close to home here in Boone, North Carolina, or here in Cincinnati, Ohio, or Boise, Idaho, and I'm going to be a part of this program because I want to be the first ones to take them to the college football playoff. That's going to be exciting for those particular brands.
Rick, we're sorry we let you down. You did a great song for the Emmy night, and we're losers. I mean, it was a powerful, powerful song that you gave us, and maybe you could win a Grammy before we win an Emmy, but just want to thank you again for putting that together.
I love the Dan Patrick Show. I know I speak for millions when I say that, and your day's coming. You too will be Susan Lucci, who will finally climb the final step and don the giant challenge.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend. That's Rick Neuheisel, CBS Sports College Football Analyst.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live co-host. See, Mike, that's how you get nominated for a sports Emmy. Segue like that. Not win one, but get nominated.
Well, that's good. And, on what you were just saying, Dan, this issue comes up all the time. I just wish they would have one rule that applies to all service academies and stick with it.
Yeah.
Because it seems like every year it's a different twist. They're allowed to. They're not allowed to. I mean, if I'm Army or Air Force, this is a great recruiting poster for me. Hey, come to this service academy. We'll let you potentially play in the NFL, unless, of course, we change our mind 4 years from now, which is possible, so maybe we won't mention that. They just need to have one rule. Needs to be the same. Needs to be fair to these guys. They need to know going in, am I going to have the chance or not have the chance if my football career works out?
I think every roster should have one extra roster spot for a military graduate.
I can get behind that, I guess. I don't know. I guess.
Well, you're un-American if you're not going to get behind that, Mike.
Okay.
Mike Florio, un-American. Wow.
There was once a time when the best football players ended up at the service academy.
Yeah.
But the world has changed so much. The sport of pro football has changed so much. The way it works out is the best of the best end up at Alabama, Clemson, or Ohio State. And everybody else is just trying to get whatever scraps they can find. So, it would not be something that contradicts the overt efforts by the NFL to cater to the military. So it wouldn't surprise me if the NFL did.
All right, let's get to the serious stuff here. It feels like there's some Jedi mind games being played by the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, or certainly Aaron Rodgers here. And I want you to paraphrase what you put on Pro Football Talk, because I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is like, I'm not going to be painted as a bad guy, where the Packers are trying to paint him as a bad guy. Okay, what's the end result with all of this, Mike?
It's whatever Aaron Rodgers wants it to be. And I think whatever happens, he's going to act like it's what he wanted. So I think that's one of the reasons why he's not telling anybody what he really wants. But when he talks to guys like James Jones, who he knows will turn around and appear on radio and TV and say what he's allowed to say, what Aaron Rodgers authorizes him to say, and James Jones says the situation is fixable, I think Aaron Rodgers wants Packers fans to say to the Packers, why haven't you fixed it? Aaron says it's fixable. Why haven't you fixed it? And when Mark Murphy, the team CEO, not even in response to a question about Aaron Rodgers, just kind of gratuitously in a written column where he had a chance to write it and read it and read it and be sure it's what he wanted to say, says that this situation is dividing our fan base, that's his way of letting Rodgers know your worst case scenario of becoming a pariah among Packers fans is coming to fruition. So it is high-level PR games being played between these two sides. Rodgers wants the Packers to be to blame. The Packers want Rodgers to be to blame. And if he just doesn't show up for training camp, I'd say most fans of the team, because they always fall in line behind the laundry, most fans of the team are going to say, you're under contract, you should be.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand, at what point does Aaron Rodgers say, now, if I'm going to a new team, I better get there soon. And if the Packers realize he doesn't want to be there, then when do you move on and what do you get? And are you comfortable with Jordan Love being your starter? Like the clock is ticking here, Mike, for both of these sides. And who's going to blink first?
You know, Dan, I've said a couple of times over the past week or two, it's better for the Packers at this point to go ahead and wait until after the season to trade him. Because if you trade him now, you get 2022 picks anyway. Go ahead and wait until you get 10 teams at the table. Now, you would have gotten more for him if you had traded him in March.
Yeah.
But now you got the Broncos and maybe the Raiders showing up for this auction. You get to March after teams have had a chance to roll the dice one more year with the current quarterbacks and decide, man, this guy sucks. We got to find somebody better. You're going to have teams lining up for a chance to get Aaron Rodgers. So if I'm the Packers, I think you choose not to play, we get $30 million back or more between the salary we don't pay him, bonus money we can recoup. We don't have to worry about him going somewhere else and making us look like idiots this year. We get a chance to let Jordan Love get ready, and maybe the fans will understand that Aaron put us in a tough spot where we had to throw him into the fire before he was ready. And we trade him for more next year. And we'll know after a year of Jordan Love whether or not he really is the guy. You know, at some point they need to find out, is he the guy? They used a first-round pick on him. They see something in him that makes them think he can be the guy. So I really do think you attach Mark Murphy to a lie detector test, I think he would prefer that Rodgers not show up this year.
I love the PR machine of now promoting Jordan Love. That you had Dan Orlovsky of ESPN, former NFL quarterback, who basically came out and said, guy can't play, Jordan Love. And then the next day, you had reporters covering the Packers, who, of course, are sort of beholden to the Packers, like, hey, Jordan Love, man. Did you see some of those passes, those throws he had there? I don't know how good he is. And I don't know when we find out until there's live bullets here, Mike. I don't care what you do in shorts and nobody gets to hit you, and you threw a 35-yard out. I want to know what happens when you have to process all this in real time.
And it's two phases. It's live bullets plus what happens after 4 to 6 weeks of you playing and defenses can break down film and figure out how to stop you. Can you and your coaches counter that? Sims had a great point yesterday on PFT Live. And he's been involved in situations like
breaking news. Chris Sims had a really good take.
I know. It's worth pointing out because it's so rare. But he's seen this before where the coaching staff wants to build confidence. So, Dan, is it really crazy to think that after Jordan Love looks so bad on Tuesday, Matt LaFleur gets together with Joe Barry, the defensive coordinator, and they script the plays we're going to call, the defenses that are going to be used, so the play pops. And it gives Jordan Love a chance when the reporters are watching.
Wow.
To create these tweets. This isn't the reporters lying. This is the Packers deliberately engineering a scenario where Jordan Love has guys wide open, or wide ass open, as Bruce Arians would say. And you get a positive. They owe it to Jordan Love to help this guy out. He didn't ask for this. You think he would have voluntarily signed up for the Packers if he had his druthers in April of 2020? Hell no. So they got to take care of this guy. You don't want to ruin him because he's caught in the crossfire between Rodgers and the front office.
He's Mike Florio, co-host of Pro Football Talk Live. You'll see that on NBC Sports Network and also here on Peacock with Chris Sims. The Buccaneers offseason, I guess, went as well as possible, where they didn't need to add much. They just re-signed people. And then Tom Brady, I guess, is going to be a new quarterback, a different quarterback after this knee surgery. He said he's going to be able to do some things he couldn't have done last year. I don't know if anybody followed up by saying, what exactly is that, Tom, that you'll be able to do? So what do you make of Tom's revelation that he's going to be able to do some different things?
He's going to run a 5.29 instead of a 5.31.
Wow.
He admitted the other day, and they need to get him to quit talking about this. This is how the Jets got in trouble back in 2009 when Brett Favre went to the Vikings and he kept making excuses for why they fell apart down the stretch, and he started talking about his arm injury. Eventually, the NFL fined everyone from the Jets for hiding it on the injury report. You got Brady saying his knee was injured back in April or May of last year. He had pretty serious surgery, as he described it. He was never listed on any Buccaneers injury report with a knee injury. At some point, with gambling spreading, and the league's got to be concerned about these things. And I know it's, you know, most fans are like, who cares? Well, gamblers care and the league should care, because eventually the Bucs are going to get in trouble. But, you know, Dan, another thing Sims and I were talking about this week, if the Packers are just able to complete that comeback when they're down 28-10, they've got fourth and whatever it was inside the 10. If they would have won that game, think of how different the vibe would have been around the Buccaneers from that point until now. Tom Brady meltdown. Interceptions on three straight drives. They blow an 18-point lead. Maybe a lot of those guys who re-signed go elsewhere. It's amazing how much that one moment affected the Packers in a negative way and boosted the Buccaneers of this team, where we're saying, who's their competitor in the NFC? Who do they have to worry about? Really? They got a path to the Super Bowl again, and it could have gone so differently if that game in Green Bay had ended a different way.
Well, look at Kansas City. With Patrick Mahomes, we would be questioning if he could win the big game if San Francisco doesn't forget about Tyreek Hill, or, you know, they don't have a couple of stops, or Garoppolo doesn't overthrow. Like, these things are, it's so small. Two more first downs, Jimmy Garoppolo is viewed differently. And Patrick Mahomes, we would say, well, he can't win the big one. Matt Ryan, you get another first down, you kick a field goal. He's an automatic Hall of Famer there. Like, it's so small, these margins. All of these, how many Super Bowls did Brady win needing help from somebody else, but Tom is the GOAT because Vinatieri did this or Rodney Harrison did this? You know, pretty, it's pretty remarkable. David Tyree doesn't catch that ball. Is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer with one Super Bowl? And you could probably say maybe not, even though he did it in New York.
Hey, if Mario Manningham doesn't catch that ball at the sideline in Super Bowl 46, if Wes Welker catches a pass that really wasn't thrown as accurately as people would say from Brady, the Patriots win that one, and there goes another one for the Giants. It's amazing how much work and effort and sweat and toil and study and time it all goes into to get yourself in a spot where that one thing goes your way.
Yeah.
Months and months and months to get to that one moment per year when it all falls your way. And it just shows you how hard it is in today's NFL. And it's why no one's repeated since 2003, 2004. Eight times in the first 39 Super Bowls, teams went back to back. And it hasn't happened since because they're all packed together. And it comes down to those moments that are there and then they're gone.
Should we celebrate? We have lost the Sports Emmy, Best Studio Host, 4 years in a row. So we are the Buffalo Bills. Huh. Now they're viewed as losers. Should we view ourselves as losers?
No. Because you've been nominated.
But we lost.
Well, but you've still been nominated. That's more than PFT Live can say. That's more than I can say. So you're nominated.
We don't measure ourselves with your show.
I understand. It's like the old West Virginia Penn State rivalry. I get it. I got my West Virginia shirt on today just for that. It was a big deal for us. Wasn't a big deal for Penn State. But anyway, you're nominated. You're there. You're in the conversation.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.